Welcome to JW Podcast, the Watchtower Jenga of podcasts that takes down the organisation one brick at a time.
Hello and welcome to another JW Podcast. We're continuing in a series of people with interesting accents. I've got my co-host with me again, Lara. Hey, Lara.
Hi, Louise.
Has anything interesting happened since we last spoke?
Yes, actually, there was something in the news in regards to a case that has just been successful.
Wow.
And we've invited a very important guest today. And the reason why he's important is because he is one of the moderators of our support group here in Australia and New Zealand. And his name is Eddie.
Hi, Eddie.
Hello, everyone. Lovely to meet you both.
Lovely to have you on, Eddie. Thank you. I feel like we're really getting some good coverage of the Queen's dependencies and overseas islands.
Right.
Well, this colony is really supported by Eddie. And Eddie,
thank you,
I'd really like to introduce you as my, I guess, biggest support network confidant. So I'm interested in knowing, how did you get to be in that position where we feel so comfortable with you, and you got to be in a position where you're really helping people on a daily basis? How did you get involved in that?
Well, part of that reason why I got involved on that level was because of what happened to me as I exited the JW organisation. I had a very heavy story to tell, and I felt the need for people to be supported, to have a safe place, or as I've referred to it before, as a safe landing spot for people when they come out, but not only for people that are recently, but also for people who have been out for decades, that they still have that cognitive dissonance or some hangover that they've hung on to for many years, and that they need to really wake up that the JW organisation is false and that they've got a beautiful life to look forward to.
I know that our friend Louise here is a friend of Bill Hahn's.
Well, actually, it was through Bill that I got knowledge of the group. The group at that time, this was in 2012, was really new. I think it was started in April or May of that year. And I reconnected with Bill, I think in June or July. And I actually said to him, look, you know, sort of like, we're in the same sort of situation. He's lost his family. I've lost mine. I wanted to connect up with another XJW that was familiar to my circumstances. And so I actually moved in with him. He was renting a house, and so I moved in with him. And he introduced me to the Australian group. I actually hadn't been very active in the group, but he told me that that they were going to have their inaugural meeting in South Australia. We were in Sydney, and the inaugural meeting was going to be in South Australia where Cherie lives. Cherie is the person who started the group. And it's quite interesting why she started the group. She actually started the group for the reason that she was quite prominent. She and her former husband were quite prominent in the community for JWs. And he actually apostatized with different teachings. And he actually ended up creating his own community or cult.
He ended up being Jesus, didn't he? I've seen him.
Yes,
I've seen him.
Anyone can look him up. He's AJ Miller. He's quite an interesting person, and he has a number of people that follow him that are in his community, and he has created a new reality for himself, which was, it gives Cherie much frustration in the fact that one of her sons is living with her former husband, and she hasn't had contact with him very much. Actually, some news today that this son actually called her today, which is quite interesting, but that's a side point. So Cherie actually had the group as a support network for her to have an outlet about what had happened and for other people to start discussing things. And it was more social in its outlook originally, but eventually the group grew and it morphed into a different structure. And I'm quite proud of what we have now, but we do honestly the inclination to continue to be very supportive towards the group, and also to the victims that are becoming more common in Australia through the Royal Commission. So it's a big task, but it's really rewarding. And I've lost my family through leaving the organisation, and they are now my family that I tend to look after in that regard. I have a lot more love towards SJWs than I ever had towards JWs when I was in.
Eddie, I just want to give a little bit of a thank you to Cherie, and I am so pleased that you just mentioned her son contacted her today. That's really nice news. Cherie herself tries to get to know each member in the group, and that's so kind. And another very special thing that Eddie does is Eddie actually does a welcome message for each person, and that includes a song that he considers is special for them. And so many people feel very, I guess, included in the group because of that little special thing that he does. And that's one reason why I request songs at the end of your podcast, Louise, because I just think, yeah, it was all Eddie's idea. Eddie loves music. And so many people get quite kind of emotional about their song choice, and they'll remember their song choice because it signifies the day that they became part of the group. So it's just so genuine and heartfelt that Eddie does that. So I just wanted to say thank you to yourself, Cherie, and the other moderators.
That's such a lovely idea. I just went with that. Every time you told me we're going to have this song at the end of the podcast, I'd go, okay, yes. You just upwardly managed me. But I didn't realise that that's where it came from. That's nice. Now, Eddie, I have to thank you as well, because the reason I even met Lara was I just got this message out of the blue from you that says, Lara's coming to England, and a lady called Lara Capot's coming to England, and she comes very well, very well recommended. That was literally the only sentence you sent to me, and I thought, oh, okay. So I drove down to London to meet you on the back of Eddie saying she comes very well recommended. I don't know why, but something about you, Eddie, is very trustworthy. I always thought, oh, well, if Eddie said it, it's like gospel.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
And he's very diplomatic, and that's why I call him a confidant. And I think quite a few people, not just me, call him that. And while I can be more confrontative, perhaps more, maybe less diplomatic than him, I can always rely on him to be diplomatic. So if ever I'm not sure of something to do, I'll just wait and then ask Eddie and then wait and then act.
I know I feel very privileged to be a part of those conversations, because I have a lot of respect for you, Lara, and for so many people that are activists and advocates within the SJW community. So it's very much a privilege that I'm able to be there and to just have any input into that. So I'm very happy that you feel that way.
Can I just ask you, Eddie, because one thing that we have kind of done a lot of in the last year, and you mentioned the group being a social group, is meetups. So if I just go to that for a moment, because I was very lucky to be invited into the group from a childhood friend, Troy, and he just, you know, told me about the group, and I thought, oh, I don't need support, but I'll just join to see what it's all about. And I think about the group every day. And one thing that I think people really like are the meetups when they happen. And you mentioned that the first group meetup was in Cherie's hometown, and
yes,
you often hold meetups in New South Wales. And I started doing that because I was inspired by you two. So I just wanted to know, would you like to talk a little bit more about meetups?
Well, there's nothing more validating than talking to people in person when you share experiences. When you can do it to a certain degree via social media, but when you meet people, you can share emotion. You can share so much more detail, and you can show empathy, and then you can just have a lot of bloody good time. So I know in Queensland we have the largest meetups, and they've been organised by a wonderful person. The last one was actually a 3-day weekend. It was and it went on for 3 days for those that wanted to be part of it. So there's so much love, there's so much encouragement and support towards one another. It's really a highly recommended thing for people to do. I know that people do it to some degree around the world. Yes, I've seen them on different Facebook forums where you see pictures, but it's something that we really need to target to get to know and connect with one another and support one another.
And can I just say, in regards to trust, there can be catfish online. there can be people who are trying to take advantage of ex-Jehovah's Witnesses.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's a different level of trust because usually you're invited by someone.
In that regards, yes, that does happen. And we do need to vet people before they come in. The Australian group is a secret group. You can't search for it on Facebook. People can't see posts being made within the group, outside of the group. So privacy is of concern and importance to many people because they need to talk to other people about things that have happened to them. And they don't want that to go back to their former congregation elders or their family or whoever that may break that confidence. So it's important for them to feel safe. But at the same time, we also need to make sure that that the people within the group are safe. And I think we've done a fairly good job in keeping it that way. The vetting process, although I couldn't tell you too much about it, it is in place so that we can check. And some of it is intuitive to see whether or not a person is genuine or not. And others might require more investigation before we allow them in. But there is a process, and that process hopefully makes people feel safer in the group. And that's the overall goal for people to feel. Oh, there was a case of one gentleman who actually came in fraudulently. He apparently had gone through Facebook claiming himself to be an ex-JW. He said he was a circuit overseer and he painted himself as a fireman. So got a lot of attention from women. And he did financially extract money out of a number of women. None of them were in our group, but we had got wind of it and we put a stop to it fairly quickly, tried to report him to the police. He was actually based in the UK, and we contacted the local authorities there and we did as much as we possibly could. But we tried to make sure that everyone is safe and that he won't be causing an issue again. So,
I just wanted to make a comment about that, Eddie, because that came to mind. Because at the time, I made a recommendation to the ex-JW Recovery Group 3 that they release a warning because a warning had already been released in the Australian and New Zealand group. And I thought, oh, that's a brilliant idea. Let's warn people because some of them are so naive and innocent when they come into a group that they really need to be, their attention needs to be drawn to it because they're learning so many things for the first time. And so I made that recommendation to the Recovery Group 3 and the feedback that they gave was, we don't do that. And I was really disappointed, but I was really pleased that we were doing it. And so it gave me a level of confidence and comfort with our group. And there's been many instances like that made me feel that our group is the one that I trust the most and the one that I most want to be a part of. So I just wanted to say thank you to our group for that.
Thank you. Thank you for that. But you have to understand that all groups have their unique problems and issues. XJW Recovery 3 has its issue that it is a big group. There's over 10,000 people there now. And it is managed differently and it has a different purpose. For us in Australia, it has a great initial place for XJWs to find out some information. And we actually find a fair portion of our XJWs through XJW Recovery 3. So it's for us, it's a great benefit because it is open, but being open has its negatives. But for us, finding people, it's great.
Yes.
Have you found that the numbers have grown in your group since the Royal Commission?
Oh, definitely. I remember in June of 2015, that was just the month or slightly more before the Royal Commission came about. And we had numbers of 170 and we were, you know, having discussions amongst ourselves. Do you think we'd get 200 by the end of the year? And well, then just the Royal Commission happened and people were streaming in. People were finding us through connections. And so we went up to 300. We're actually approaching a fourfold increase now. So it is growing.
Will you be publishing those figures in a yearbook, Eddie? Because I think you'll find Watch Tower Society are kicking their yearbook into
touch. Will only be putting it online in future. We've decided not to publish the printed editions.
Okay, right.
Now, Louise, is that the news you were referring to in your introduction? Because I nearly said that because you said, is there new news? Now, should we discuss this briefly, this yearbook thing?
Well, we can do because I did. I'm stacking podcasts to release every fortnight, and the next one that I'm doing is one with Neil. The one next one I've done, is one with Neil, and we talk about that. But I put a comedy video out about it. So, well, no, but it's fine because I've already put the information out in comedy form because I just found it so hilarious. Just yes. So funny that. So you go ahead and talk about it in a sensible way, and I'll.
Oh, no. If you've already covered it, I won't worry about it. So go to one of your other versions. But I just thought if you haven't, it would be worth mentioning that the yearbook is no longer being released, we've heard.
Yeah, and that's a great loss to us as a community of XJWs, I feel.
I believe it will be available online. But
oh, thank God for that.
I think it will be not seen as quite reliable because it being online, it can be modified. So when you have a printed edition, you know that's a record that you can keep, and you know it's permanent. Can't be edited.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a moving feast, isn't it? What they're moving towards everything, as you say, being able to be covered over, changed, edited, back managed so that it fits the narrative they want at the current time. But yeah, that's a separate issue. So, Eddie, can I ask you a little bit about your journey as a Jehovah's Witness to an ex-Jehovah's Witness?
Certainly. As a JW, I actually was a pretty much a nobody. I found a beautiful wife, and we had four beautiful children. And
before you got married, were you born in the...
No, sorry. My sister had become a JW just in, I think it was in 1976, so just after the 1975 saga, she got in, and she was in it for a long time. She tried to get me in as I was a younger person, and eventually I moved back to Sydney. We were living in South Australia in my teenage years, and we moved back to Sydney. I got a place of my own. She came and moved in with me, and through her contact, I got to know brothers and sisters a lot more. And so it became a way of life for me. I took a long time to get baptized because I wasn't that keen, but I eventually did, and I found someone. And so it was, it made me stay in permanently. And so then we were a happy couple for many years until I started noticing a lack of love, genuine love within the organisation. And I would have no qualms about saying my concerns to people. And I thought, well, if something's wrong with the organisation, it needs to be fixed, rather than being of any real concern to others, you know, sort of like it was just ignored. Then in 2002, there was an Australian investigative program. It was on Sunday mornings, and the show was actually called Sunday, and it was a well-regarded show. And I actually saw at this particular edition, it talked about the child sexual abuse cases within Jehovah's Witnesses, and there was one particular abuser who has 30 or 40 victims, and he was able to be without any real punishment within the organization. And he was never uncovered until the individuals took him to court. He has eventually been jailed, and some of those members are now in our group. But that news really created a lot of shockwaves in myself. And I innocently, without any malicious intent, I emailed 30 or 40 brothers that I had emailed addresses to, and I sent it out, and I didn't get one response from any of them. And I was quite amazed by that. And then on a following meeting within the fortnight, I think it was, there was a public needs talk saying that someone is being marked, and curiosity thinking, well, who is being marked? And it occurred to me that it was probably me. At that time, on reviewing things later on, I realized that my wife's attitude was even changing towards me. So the elders had been talking to her and discouraging her from me, and eventually she wanted a divorce. I spoke to the elders about it, and they were really, they had as much concern about it as no one. they really had no concern, and they basically said they have no power to do anything about that, and everyone knows that's not true.
They had the power to interfere in your marriage and encourage your wife to divorce you, but then they didn't have the power to uninterfere.
It was the choice of these elders that decided not to do anything, because obviously they thought that I was not the right sort of a person because I had published things. Then things went downhill quickly from there with my family. I actually went to see an aunt that was dying in Europe, and when I got back, the house was empty. And apparently the elders had helped her vacate the house. All the possessions were taken out, including my possessions as well. Even things like photographs, which were mine, I've never been able to have access to. I've requested it in court, but she's refused to do so. Even though I've offered her half of my retirement funds to her in order just to get my photographs, she's refused that. That's the malicious intent that she's that she continues.
Oh, that's horrible.
I'm so sorry, Eddie. This is the second time I've heard this, because I asked you your story some time ago, but hearing it again and the first time, I mean, it's just heartbreaking, and it must be extremely difficult for you to recount this to us, and I can hear it in your voice. So I'm really sorry.
And I can tell you that there's a lot more detail that I won't go into. But, you know, some of them are actually illegal activities that some of the elders have done, and also some of the brothers. I know that one brother who had a crush on my now ex-wife before we were married, and he became a policeman. And so he was a JW policeman, and he used his position to get me away from the family. He actually placed an AVO against me, which is an apprehended violence order, even though I had displayed no violence towards them. He actually put that through in court against me. And so that's the some quite way out there things that were done, but some things were swept under the carpet and allowed to happen. My ex-wife, in just before I left, she had to change congregations because the borders had changed. And so I actually went and spoke to the elders of the new congregation, and I knew some of them, and I told them what had happened, and they were honestly in shock with what was told to them, both how she behaved and also how the elders had behaved. And as far as the elders in the other congregation, they said that they have no jurisdiction over that because that's another boys' club. It's outside of their field. They can't do anything about that. They can maybe talk to the CEOs about it, but they don't have the authority. They actually went and asked my ex-wife about what had happened, and she refused to discuss anything with them. She said they have no right to do that. So they were quite furious about that situation. And they did call me back and report to say they actually have detailed all of that on her publisher card, that she is quite belligerent and was unwilling to submit to the congregational elders. Within the elders, they're aware of something. But in reality, most of the congregation were not aware of what had happened, and they continue to love bomb her as a single mom bringing up four boys. And so she's still getting praise for that. And, you know, sort of that's all that she would be concerned about. She would not be concerned about what's written in the publisher's card.
They've wreaked havoc in your life, Eddie. That's awful. I can understand why you're an ex-Jehovah's Witness now. That question.
But from that, I've been able to see the need for people to have that safe landing spot when they come out of the organisation. They need to know that they are not the only people that this is happening to. This happens time and time again, and it is truly sad that this happens. But because it does, we need to provide a support mechanism for those people, for them to wake up, to realise they're not alone, and that they will also be provided with information to show them that the organisation is a cult. It is very controlled. It is, the information in there is
manipulation.
It is manipulative in order to keep people in and to also keep yourself doubting that you eventually will go back.
And the look on people's faces in a figurative sense. So when people join a support group and they suddenly realise they're not alone, and they suddenly realise there are people who understand them, and they suddenly realise they've lost their family, they've lost their friends, but there's a community who gets it, that when that dawns on them in a social group like Facebook XJW group, I mean, you know, you're so happy for them. And particularly when, say, someone recognizes them from an old congregation, or someone recognizes the family name because they're related somehow, or someone recognizes them because they lost their kids and they feel aligned to them. It's just so heartwarming to see when those things happen. And that's the type of thing that Eddie and his team, as part of Cherie's group, facilitate. And we need more of that. It is activism. And although they're not going out there chasing down politicians, this is a fundamental need that we've got in our community.
I think there are different forms of activism and advocacy.
Yes.
But this is a very important one, because we need to look after those that are alone, that that need that recovery, that need to help get them back on their feet. Because unless we start encouraging people to do that, people will not be able to become activists and advocates. So as we do that, we're making the community stronger, and we're trying to encourage more people to be involved in activism and advocacy. And that way the community becomes much more stronger, and the health of the ex-member will improve.
Eddie, I want to ask you a question about going back to the Royal Commission. So Louise asked before about the numbers of growth in the group. And I want to ask you about collation of the information that you do. But before I do that, Louise, I mentioned when you first introduced us that there was news that happened last night. Do you mind if I just quickly tell you about the news that happened last night and then go back to asking Eddie the question?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Okay, so this is from ABC News here in Australia, and it was released just over 24 hours ago. And I'm just going to read part of the news article for you. It was by a journalist called Antoinette Collins. And the headline says, Central Coast man who used gratuitous cruelty to torture multiple women jailed for 27 years. Now, I was sent this by a friend of mine who's an ex-Jehovah's Witness. And I thought, why has she sent me this article? What's this got to do with our usual conversations? Maybe it's got to do with domestic violence or something, and it was just random. Wasn't until I got halfway through the article that I saw why. So let me just quickly read a bit of it. It says, a Central Coast man who raped and tortured a succession of women over more than two decades has been sentenced to at least 27 years in jail. The 53-year-old man, who cannot be named for legal reasons, was found guilty of 55 charges relating to the physical, sexual, and psychological abuse of women he lived with between 1988 and 2014. The man, who was a member of the Jehovah's Witnesses, was accused of raping the women with household objects and detaining them. So I when I read that word, Jehovah's Witnesses, I thought, of course, this is why she sent it to me. Of course, another one. And then the next paragraph goes on to say, the sadistic nature of the offences included bashing and raping the women for not folding, washing correctly, making them eat off the floor, locking them in wardrobes and hog-tying them, and placing them face down in a bathtub full of water. Now, I don't want to say too much more because I haven't given you a warning that I would read this article. But what I do want to say about this article is he has been jailed for 27 years. That does not happen lightly in Australia. This is something very unusual that he would get such a long sentence. Let me tell you, he deserves it. So I'm just so glad that this guy that these people have received justice and this guy's behind bars. Now, the reason why I said that, and I just want to say hello and thank you to the people that reported that man. That was very brave, and I'm so pleased that they've gotten a level of justice. So thank you to them. But going back to Eddie, and my question is, Eddie, one thing that you do, which is critical, is you collect news articles like that. Can you just tell us a little bit about how you collect information about things like the Royal Commission and like child sexual abuse cases, domestic violence cases? Can you just tell us about what you do?
It originally started with just the need for the group to be informed. So anything pertinent to JWs was encouraged to be shared within the group. I felt that it was just needed for the members to remain within the group, and I would collate information from all the different forums that XJWs have, and anything else that I came across, and put it to the group. So that way, they felt it was a place worthy of information that it came across. That continued on until the Royal Commission started, and then I thought, well, the Royal Commission is about to start. We're going to have a lot of posts regarding this. And so what I did was I just started one post, and it has grown over the years since then. So anything in relationship to the Royal Commission, it's there in a chronological order so that we can refer back to it. If we have someone who has a question regarding the Royal Commission, or someone who needs support, they need to know about a particular article, if they want to look back on a particular video, the one of Jeffrey Jackson saying this, that, or the other, we can draw people to those quite easily. It's a nice, easy access for people to find that information. And so it has been quite helpful for helping other people. That was one goal. I actually also did share it with the XJW Recovery 3 group, and I expanded on it during the time of the Royal Commission. I haven't done that since then, but I may eventually update it if it's deemed necessary. But, yeah, so it was just a little goal of mine, and I was glad to see that it had benefited a number of people to have that information available to them and that they can find it.
I mean, that's an amazing resource. I wish I was in your group.
Well, you know, Louise.
I have no idea. I'm only teasing you.
No, Louise was born in Melbourne, Australia, and I actually did petition to have you included.
You did,
but it was the other meanies, yeah, remember?
Louise, do you know which hospital you were born in?
Queen Victoria Hospital. And now I've got my birth.
Ah, yeah. Because I'm also a Melbournean, but I was born in the southeast suburbs.
Ah, right.
Not as royal.
Apart from being childish and having a little dig, I was going to say that you do, as well as providing resources, your group does provide support to abuse victims as well, doesn't it, Eddie? Can you explain on that a little bit more?
Well, there are cases where people have been in court and that they'll say, oh, look, I just need some information, and they'll message me. And while they're in court, I'll look up that information and pass that on to them. And that was one of the advantages of having that collation of information. So it was easy for me to find as well. But we also have a group. We have side groups with the main support group. We have another side group related to the Charities Commission, so we'll be chasing that up in Australia. And we also have child sexual abuse victims, and we have, so that they have a further privacy for their own group, so that it's not part of the main group, so everyone else can see it, but it's an even safer place for victims.
You've also got a dating group, Eddie. I think you've forgotten that one. Not you personally, but somebody thought of a great idea about 6 months ago, and they started a great dating group. And there's actually quite a few XJW dating groups. So that's also been a spin-off.
Yeah, Jason Walker, I think, was the one who started up the dating group. And, yeah, so I actually haven't visited it myself, but I hope that it's going well.
You mentioned an example about somebody who travelled to be beside a victim in court.
Yes, we had a case of one victim who is in Cairns, which is as far north in Queensland as you can possibly go. It's in the tropical area. And she has a support person, and that support person is in Perth, Western Australia. Now, she's in almost the entire opposite side of the country. She's down lower end on the western side. So to go, and just recently, only a few weeks ago, the victim had to go to court, and where the actual abuser did confess to it, and so it made the whole case easier. But her support person did travel all the way from Perth to Cairns, which is, I believe it's around 4,000 kilometres. So yeah, That's the dedication that some people have. People have that connection with one another, and that they will support one another.
That's an important thing. And we've also had connectivity to media. We've had connectivity to police. We've had connectivity to politicians. We've had connectivity to law firms. We've also had other people who are advocates and personal support offered. I mean, I've seen that happen on an almost daily basis. If there's a cry for help, people respond immediately. And so it's not generic support. It's very dedicated and personal support sometimes. I mean, I mentioned Troy earlier, who had invited me into the group, and he acts as something like a life coach where he will spend time physically with people. He can invite people to a meetup on a Monday night and he'll get 20 people, you know, within a 24-hour period, because people know that he wants to be there to help them. And
he is a comedian. He's a bloody funny guy.
Yeah.
And so there is a bit of an inspiration in there. So.
You'd like him, Louise.
Yeah.
Can I just tell you how I reconnected with him? So my birthday is – so I'm an Aries. And can you guess when that is?
No.
Okay, you tried really hard.
June.
It's in April.
Okay.
And in April, and you know this as a Melburnian, Louise, but we've got something called the Melbourne Comedy Festival, and it starts in March and it finishes in April. And about, I don't know, 7 years ago, something like that, maybe a bit longer, I went, because I go every year for my birthday, because I know I'm quite serious, but I do have a sense of humour. And so because I go every year for my birthday, 1 year I went to the comedy festival, and you know sometimes you go to see the headline act, and sometimes you just go to see a random act and just see what happens. So I was sitting in the back of this comedy festival, this little place, and the headline act was a guy called Troy King. Troy King is a very, I guess it may be a common name elsewhere, but in XJW communities, there's only one. And I just thought, I'm going to go there and see if that's the guy I grew up with. And I sat in the back and I sat in the dark and I just listened. And to be honest, I didn't laugh as much as I should have, because I was sitting there thinking, will he talk to me?
Oh.
And at the end of his gig, I just sat there and looked, and he saw, he didn't know it was me, but he saw that someone was there and he came to talk to me. And he didn't know who I was and he didn't know why I was sitting in the dark. But it dawned on him who I was, he remembered me, and we made a reconnection back then. And here we are today, both helping people in our own individual ways that are part of our community. So comedy brought us together, Louise.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I was talking about meetups, and because you mentioned how geographically large Australia is and how meetups are managed and how important they are. And so maybe, and we were just talking about comedy, and there was a cruise that was organised. So I thought you might want to talk about maybe the cruise and how often meetups are and how they're organised.
Well, there's no particular pattern for meetups, but the one in Brisbane has now become an annual event, and we do it every March. But other ones tend to be more random. But this year we actually have planned a comedy cruise, which will be departing from Brisbane. And there's a fair group going now that have gone along. I'd love to go myself if I had the time off work. You know, I know it will be a blast, not because of the comedy that's on there, or not just because of it, but because of the people that are there, because it would be a truly beautiful event. Yeah, so they're the sort of things that happen. Every region has its own, like every capital city does. There are some smaller cities that have meetups. And I know I personally go to as many as I can. I've gone up to the last two Brisbane meetups from Sydney. And in July, I went down to Melbourne. I've gone to South Australian meetups twice, we're talking of about 1,000 miles in each direction. So they're not just around the corner. They're quite far to go to.
Can I put myself out on a limb and extend an invitation for Louise to get on the comedy cruise? I mean, I know it has to be vetted, but, you know, she's a legend in the group, and I really think that they would like to extend that invitation.
Oh, definitely, yes.
Yeah.
And
you take it back to your people and they can discuss it, and then...
Oh, look, I can tell you now that you would go along very well with the people that have already signed up for the cruise.
Oh, God, it really does sound amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is your turn to visit us, Louise, so please come.
When is it next year?
I believe it's in April or May. May, I believe.
Are you kidding? Oh, it's too soon.
Yeah, you've had too many holidays. You have to go back to work.
That is true. That is exactly it. It does sound amazing, though. I'm so jealous. So you're invite. It's invite by invite for people, is it, within your group?
Yeah. So that is something really positive. Now, Eddie, I want to ask something that is a bit more awkward, and that is because of the level of dysfunction, I guess, in the community. And this happens in all groups, and it happens even if you're not in a group. But there is a level of pain caused to people, and when they leave the Jehovah's Witnesses, they become dysfunctional. And that dysfunction seems to, I guess, be at a peak at the time that you leave because you're lost and because you don't have the skills in life that you would as a worldly person. Mm. And so therefore it can be, I guess, very confronting and also dramatic. So what tends to happen is that the problems arise. So Eddie, can you talk to us about the guidelines that you develop for the group and how you manage that dysfunction, any problems as they arise?
Well, it's definitely when people leave the organisation, they look to certain things to put their understanding in things. Some people will either go towards a theistic faith, and others will become there are other groups that will become convinced that we're all being controlled by lizard creatures. So there are different groups of people, but when we have a discussion in the group, you have two different opposing views. You're bound to end up with an argument. So what we try to do is discourage people from talking about those particular topics. They're welcome to put it on their own page, but not on their group page, because we don't want people getting upset with one another. The things that unite us together and the support that we have towards one another, rather than drawing out our differences. So as a guideline, we try to keep those sort of topics separate, so we discourage them. The problem with doing that is that people tend to look at the administration group as a bunch of elders that we're controlling everyone else, just like what they had in the organisation. And so we do try to encourage people to have as much say as they want. And if something does come up that is a little bit borderline, we tend not to get involved, but just keep an eye on things. And if a problem comes about, we'll pounce on it and so try to prevent problems. We don't want people leaving the group because they've been upset by someone else, so that they're going to miss out on help and support.
People muddle up, "I've been controlled before and now I can say what I like," with sort of common decency, I think, sometimes. I've seen occasions where people will say something that is socially quite offensive and then get angered when that post is removed. And I think that's not a Jehovah's Witness or an XJW thing. That's just a normal human being thing. If I said something really offensive in my staff room at work, somebody might point out to me that it's not an appropriate way to speak to other human beings, or maybe there was a better way that I could have done it. And I could say, "Oh, you're just trying to control me." But there is a level of ordinary societal interaction that I think...
And we need to...
Yeah, we've been so sensitised to control that it does trigger that, you know, you're not elders, you can't tell me what to do anymore. But it's a very difficult thing to manage, and I totally understand both sides of it because I've been on both sides of it, yeah.
And something that we need to be reminded, some people that who have left the organisation just recently, they may not have very strong etiquette in their social media status. And so they don't know how to deal with problems when they arise. So just the smallest things can end up being a lot more larger than they need to be.
And online, you can't see people's body language. Like if you're with someone in real life, you see the smile and their eyes and the body language, and that moderates the words. When you type it, you don't see any of that. So I'm always putting stupid jokes online, and somebody from another country with a different angle on humour will take me literally and say, "What are you talking about?" And I go, "Oh, I'm just goofing around, it's a joke." But of course you can't see my body goofing around. So
yeah,
there's all that to take in, and it works the same way if somebody says something that might sound a little bit harsh or a little bit direct. If you'd seen the body language, it probably wouldn't come over as harsh or direct. But online media is a big new thing for everybody. You know, it's a societal change in the way we interact with human beings, isn't it? And we're getting used to the new the new ground rules and how it works. And when you say something online, I think people think that their Facebook page is their living room, and I would say it's more like going into the town centre and shouting something out. So if somebody comes back, if I shout out in the middle of town that I hate a political group, then people are going to shout back at me because I've shouted it out in the middle of town. And I would expect that. If I've said it in my living room and a friend gets on at me and I've just given them tea and then they're ragging on at me for something I've said, I might think that's a little bit rude. So I see social media as more like the town centre than your living room, really.
Definitely. And we need to remember that there are people around us and that we need to be considerate of their own, of other people's feelings. As we say something, we may disagree with them. We don't actually have to say it in those particular terms, because a lot of people become keyboard warriors. They say things a lot more easily online than they would in person.
Yeah.
That is illustration of being in a public square is probably a very good one to keep in mind.
While we're on the issue of potential problems that might arise in a support group, I don't know if it's happened yet, but it's something that's always in the back of my mind. I think it's happened a little bit where you get different members of a family. Maybe some have left Jehovah's Witness and some are still in. And then the others leave and there's still tension between the family members and then they become members of the same group. But even worse, I keep thinking one day we're going to get abusers that might leave and join a support group. And I just wonder how that's going to play out. A slightly modified version of that is when elders leave and they've been quite, you know, you might have had personal interactions with an elder that have been very negative. You might have been disfellowshipped by someone who then leaves and joins your support group. It's a difficult one to navigate, isn't it?
It is. And that's something that you can't know about unless you have inside information. It's, And I do know of cases where there have been some XJWs who have been abusers, not in Australia that I'm aware of, but internationally it is known. And yeah, for the average person, we just don't know. So we need to be careful of those sorts of scenarios. We deal with everything so that there are safety measures in order to what we do, careful of what we do share with. One good thing on that is that within the XJW activist groups, there is a very good representation of females there, and I don't need to take off my hat to them because they know the excellent work that they do, but they need to be acknowledged that they are very much a part of our community and they do some fantastic work.
Yes, definitely. And hats off again to Sherry for setting up the group.
Yes, we all love her, and we're very appreciative of what the group has become from her efforts.
Eddie, is there anything that we've not covered or not asked you that you would have liked to have mentioned?
I don't believe so. Pretty much it, I believe.
Great stuff. Now, I was just about to ask Lara the same question, but we've just lost her. If she comes back. She normally comes back eventually.
Hi, guys. I think I'm back.
Lara, is there anything else that you'd like to ask Eddie or anything that you'd like to raise before we bring this podcast to a close?
Yes, actually, not to ask Eddie, but I thank Eddie very much for his time. And I'm so pleased that we were able to have him on, because people like him who are diplomatic and who help people personally are so important in the community. So thank you, Eddie. One thing I just wanted to correct from a previous podcast was just, we were talking about the new letter from the elders that was sent out, Louise, last time.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to correct something minor, which was I talked about how the letter referred to victims only as female, and I didn't quite get that right. So if people get the opportunity to search for that letter, please have a look for yourself to see what it says. It actually is a number of pages long, so please have a look at that. And there's just a minor correction, but in the main, really, we're concerned about the culture and the policies and practices rather than just that one individual letter. And there was one thing that I just wanted to raise, and it's about a song, Louise, and it's about comedy. And I have chosen a song for Eddie this time. And I referred to it last time, I think, as Come Home Cardinal Pell. And it's actually called Bring Home Cardinal Pell. And we did bring home Cardinal Pell. Now, another song we played a couple of podcasts ago was the name of the song was From Little Things, Big Things Grow by Paul Kelly. And Eddie actually picked up that I didn't explain what the song was about. So the song was about Aboriginal people, actually, Australian Aboriginal people, and it was about their fight, really, in, you know, back in the colony times. So I kind of stole that song, but the point of the song was from Little Things, Big Things Grow. Now, this song is about getting justice for the Catholics. So it's not a JW-specific song, but it's funny because it's a Tim Minchin song. And it was successful. So in your honour, we're going to play this song.
Thank you. And the money from this song actually was in support of the victims. So Tim Minchin actually gave all the profits from this song to the victims that were related to the Cardinal Pell scenario and his abusive partner.
Yeah.
Is it possible to be even more in love with Tim Minchin than I already am?
Yeah, if he does a song for us, Louise, that is the point at which you will reach nirvana.
No, Lara, if he did a song for me.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
On the podcast.
Yeah. And so Eddie also recommended a song that I'm going to ask you to play on a different podcast, and we'll keep Eddie guessing as to which song that will be.
Okay, cool.
I know what it is, but he doesn't know which song it will be. That's for another time.
Cliffhanger, Eddie. You've got to listen to her every time.
She knows how to dole that information.
Well, thank you both so much for all your time and effort. I really appreciate it because I think you've done odd times so that I didn't have to get up in the middle of the night, and that's very, very kind of you. And thank you for representing the people with different accents. I hope to speak to you all again soon. Say goodbye, Lara.
Bye, Louise. Bye, Eddie. Thank you.
Good night, Louise. Good night, Lara.
It's a lovely day in Ballarat, I'm kicking back, thinking of you. I hear that you've been poorly, I am sorry that you're feeling blue. Know what it's like when you feel a little shitty, you just want to curl up and have an itty bitty do not day. But a lot of people here really miss you, Georgie. They really think you ought to just get on a plane.
Just get on a plane.
We all just want you to come home, Cardinal Pell. I know you're not feeling well, and being crook ain't much fun. Even so, we think you should come home, Cardinal Pell. Come down from your citadel, it's just the right thing to do. See what was under your nose, Georgie, back in 73 when you were living with Jerry. Is it true that you knew but you chose to ignore, or did you actively try to keep it buried? And years later, when survivors, despite the shame and their fear, stood up to tell their stories, you spent year after year working hard to protect the church's assets. I mean, with all due respect, dude, I think you're scum, and I reckon you should come home, Cardinal Pell. We know you're not feeling well, perhaps you just need some sun. It's lovely here, you should come home, you pompous buffoon, and I suggest do it soon. I hear the tolling of a bell, and it has a pellian knell. I wanna be transparent here, George, I'm not the greatest fan of your religion, and I personally believe that those who cover up abuse should go to prison. But your ethical hypocrisy, your intellectual vacuity, and your arrogance don't bother me as much as the fact that you have turned out to be such a goddamn coward. You're a coward, Georgie. Come and face the music, Georgie. You owe it to the victims, Georgie. Come and face the music, the music. Hallelujah, hallelujah.
If the Lord God omnipotent reigneth,
your name on it, and so I suggest you toughen up and go. Want a beer and a chat. I know you're scared, Georgie Poo. They have a right to know what
your
you
time
do.
Is running out to atone, Georgie. I think the Lord is calling you home, Georgie. Perhaps he could forgive even you.
He may forgive even you.
If you just let them know. Oh, Cardinal Pell, my lawyer just rang me to tell me this song could get me in legal trouble. Oh, well, Cardinal Pell, if you don't feel compelled to come home by a sense of moral duty, perhaps you will come home and frickin' sue me.